This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Avoid Probate with Jason Laidler, heard every Sunday at 8 a.m. on Zoomer Radio. Welcome to the program with a unique focus on helping Canadians avoid probate. The one thing everyone should know about probate is that it's not inevitable. With some planning and good advice, you can avoid the exhausting, expensive, and time-consuming probate process and have your affairs settled quickly and privately. Speaking of good advice, here are your hosts of Avoid Probate.
Good morning, Zoomer listeners. Welcome to the Avoid Probate Show. Glad you're joining us on this Sunday morning. I'm Jason Laidler, here with my world-famous co-host, Ted Walshen, as usual. Good morning, Mr. Walshen. How are you today?
Well, Jason, thank you very much, and how about yourself?
I'm just fine, thanks. Are you starting to decorate for Halloween? It's not far away.
No, I'm going to do a little bit this. We never get people come for Halloween because of where I'm located.
Yeah, it's a busy road you're on there.
Exactly, and so it's just so much more convenient for, you know, for kids and parents with little kids to take them to neighboring homes that are in residential areas that are tucked away from, you know, from buses and
traffic, yeah,
major traffic route
where they can get the good candy, right, Ted? Okay.
That's well, right. Everybody knows there's the one house that's got the good candy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do they still even do that? I guess they do. It's been a while. My girls are older, so I honestly haven't trick-or-treated lately. I'm sure you haven't either, Ted.
No,
although,
no.
You're going to be able to take your granddaughter out soon.
Oh, my granddaughter's been going for a couple of years, but she lives in Guelph, and it's usually during a weeknight. It has been anyway, so I haven't really made my way out there for Halloween, but... I will see what she's dressed as Belle this year from Beauty and the Beast.
Of course. Yeah, I remember those were fun times when the girls were really little
and
so exciting and getting together with the other neighborhood girls. We did one year. Yeah. I had we call it a four-wheeler, a side-by-side, ATV, you know what I mean? And I had this little trailer, and we hooked them up together, and all the kids and adults were in the trailer going from house to house to house, and the kids were loving it. And so were the adults because, you know, they happen to have a few refreshments with them on the back of the trailer.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Help keep warm. You know, some of those Halloween nights can be chilly.
That's right. Well, the interesting thing on this day, Halloween, of course, is in a couple of days, so Tuesday. But it was on this day in 1929. Do you know what happened?
No, I don't remember.
I'm sorry. On this day, the 29th, in 1923.
I still don't remember.
New York Stock Exchange crashed, ending
I could have guessed.
The great bull market of the 20s and beginning the Great Depression, this day also known as Black Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Eek.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But respect to those who managed to get through it, with hard times and hard to get even just basic food and jobs. You know, you've seen the lineups of jobs, men looking for jobs, and yeah, must have been very difficult.
Yeah,
that's why the seniors today, like my granny I mentioned before, still like clip every piece of cardboard instead of throwing it out, so they could use it for something like granny did with her shopping list.
Mm-hmm.
Right, don't throw anything away.
That's right. Now on the lighter side of things. Today is National Cat Day.
Oh,
it's also National Cook for Your Pet Day.
Okay, who cooks for their pet?
Well, some people do. Some people
get
do.
Out.
Some people, yeah, they do. They make special foods. You know,
steak and eggs.
Well, I mean, your cats and your dogs can eat various foods. Not all. I mean, we have to. Our cat went through some problems with its urinary tract, so we're really careful. We only give her this special prescription. Him, I should say, a special prescription food because there's just so much food that you buy, especially if you buy canned food. It's so heavily salted. It's just brutal. I mean, remember the commercial years ago that they put out. I think Campbell's put out a commercial with a guy standing in a room and he's up to his waist in salt. He says, this is how much salt we've removed from our soup in the last year, right? I mean, it's brutal.
Well, I can understand why they're putting it in people food to add flavor to the food, but why do they bother salting cat food? You think the cat's not going to eat it if it's not salty enough?
No, it's a preservative, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone who's a regular listener will know Ted's the cat guy. Jason's the dog guy.
Well, but I love dogs, too. I just don't happen to have one right now. Mm-hmm. But I've had many dogs over my lifetime. Probably a half dozen at least.
And tying it back into Halloween, Ted, cats play a role in Halloween, don't they?
They do, yeah. Black cats.
The black ones, especially. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything else going on? We got a big show.
Well, it's also a National Hermit Day, and I don't even know what I was thinking about that. Talking to a friend, I said, is that even politically correct to say anymore? A National Hermit's Day.
I don't know.
Because you can't say, you're not supposed to say homeless people.
But homeless people aren't necessarily hermits.
No, I know that, but I'm just saying that term, for example, you're not supposed to use that term.
So how about recluse? Is that offensive?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know who makes up these rules. It's people who think that other people are offended, and generally they aren't offended. Strange. National Oatmeal Day. Not an oatmeal eater.
You love it.
Oh, are you?
Love it.
Yeah, I don't know why. Sure. I never really got into it.
Scotch porridge oats. Good for you.
It's not that I don't like it, but I just don't eat it. It's also National Cinnamon Day.
Holy smokes. It's a National Lots of Stuff Day.
Lots of national days. Exactly.
Some people put cinnamon on their oatmeal.
There you go. Yeah,
see how I did that? That was pretty good. Unrehearsed.
You know who really likes that? Hermits.
And I was going to say cats.
Hermits.
You could cook that and feed it to your cat. Okay, this is going down the pan fast.
You probably could. Coming up on the program, of course, Debbie Stanley from ETP Canada will return. She is moving along at a nice pace, by the way, as an executor of an estate. And she will fill us in on what is happening in her life from that aspect anyway.
Well, we're going to talk about the RSP converting to a RIF as well, because it came up recently in more than one meeting this past week, Ted. I didn't bring it up. The people we were sitting down with for this no-charge consultation that we're happy to provide, it was on their minds. And we're going to so that's one of the reasons why I thought, okay, it's come up a couple times. It's timely. We're going to explain all of that in some detail. We're going to get in some detail today. So you're going to have to pay attention. Listeners, I know you always do. And then, of course, we have our traditional mailbag again. I think we took a bit of a break last week from email, but we do have an email to share this week. So we'll take care of all that stuff. We're going to take our first break of the morning first. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere.
Learn more about avoiding probate at avoidprobate.ca or call 1-844-667-7628. Back with more Avoid Probate after this.
Hi there, this is Jason Laidler from the Avoid Probate Show, and I'm pleased to say I'm having a quick conversation to introduce my friend Paul Portman from Portman Law, who is a regular contributor to the Avoid Probate Show. He's one of the lawyers on the team at avoidprobate.ca. Paul, how are you?
Good, Jason. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So you're one of the lawyers on the team because you have an expertise in law, specifically in what part?
So I specialize in estate law, litigation, and bear trusts. I do quite a bit of work in that area.
And I'm glad you mentioned bear trust, because we often talk on the Avoid Probate Show about how a bear trust can help avoid the probate on property, correct?
That's right.
And it's widely misunderstood, but it's something that you're able to help our listeners figure out and avoid the probate on their house, cottage, commercial property, whatever it might be, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And how does it work? Like, in a nutshell, the way the bear trust is set up, tell us real quick.
Yeah, so a bear trust in a lot of ways is like any other trust agreement. The major difference between a regular trust agreement and a bear trust is that the bear trustee doesn't really have any powers in relation to the trust. They can't really do anything other than what's explicitly in the bear trust agreement. And the Bear Trust Agreement doesn't say anything other than they're holding legal title.
So really, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't create a tax event. It just simply avoids the probate nightmare.
That's correct.
Okay, and if listeners want to contact you directly, I mean, they can always reach you through us at avoidprobate.ca, but if they want to contact you directly, the best way to reach you is what?
They can contact me by email at paul@portmanlaw.ca. That's PORTMANLAW.ca. Or they can contact me by telephone at 647-527-5878.
And it doesn't have to be a Bear Trust question in particular, any estate question. You can help them out, correct?
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks for being here today. And I know you've been a guest on the show in the past, and hopefully you'll be a guest in the future. And we will continue to work together to help all the listeners at AM 740 Zoomer Radio who have any estate planning questions. They can call Jason Lather or they can call Paul Portman directly.
This is Avoid Probate on Zoomer Radio with Jason Laidler of avoidprobate.ca.
Welcome back to the Avoid Probate show on this Sunday morning. I'm Jason Laidler here with the world famous Ted Walsh. We're back after our first break of the day. And in this segment, it's one of our favorite segments of the week, of course, because this is when we introduce Debbie Stanley and her special segment called Solving the Probate Puzzle with Debbie Stanley. Dun, dun, dun. And of course, regular listeners will know that Debbie's been working on, I keep calling it a real-time file, and it is kind of like a real-time file. What I mean by that is the file belongs to a real person who passed away, I believe, May, or Debbie will correct me if I'm wrong on that. I'm getting the nod. Yes, May of this year, earlier in 2023. And unlike the first file we did this with Mr. and Mrs. Chips, Debbie Stanley is actually acting as the executor in this second file that she kindly labeled Roxy Moo after a puppy dog of hers that has passed. Very cute. So a quick update. We know that while Debbie was getting a sunburn in Greece, the certificate arrived from the probate court, which means that she was able to begin to really take care of business in earnest. You know, there is work to do whilst waiting for the certificate to arrive, including the application. The application is the first part of the probate process. And Debbie and her staff, you know, completed that application, submitted it. And that's when you sit back and play the waiting game. But there are things that you can do while you're waiting. And she did some of those things. She told us some of those stories about cleaning out the condo and auctioning some items off and doing what you can do while you wait to receive those, what we call the magical powers from the province. Well, Debbie, welcome back to the show this morning. Glad you're joining us. You've got those magical powers. What's going on?
I have the magic wand. Yes, I have the magical powers and the magical wand in hand. It looks like a pen, though, right now. So not too exciting.
Yeah.
A mini wand. And this week, I'm happy to announce that we have sold the condo.
Get out of here.
I'm not even kidding. It was fast to go, and we're closing in about 3 weeks from now.
Let me interrupt you because I want to clarify. We've stated many times that while you're waiting to receive the certificate, you cannot sell mom's house or condo or whatever it is. So my question is, was this a buyer who was already like on the hook whilst probate was taking place and was just waiting for the certificate, or is this just all fresh since? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It was fresh since we were getting ready to put it up for sale because we thought maybe we were getting close to the certificate appointment. It came faster than we expected. So timing wise, this was good. And I'm actually glad it happened this way because let's say for the sake of argument, this buyer came forward before I had the certificate.
Right.
They want to move so fast. I wouldn't have been able to take this offer because they're ready to close within a matter of weeks. They're ready to get this going. And if I didn't have that certificate, this would have been a deal that I couldn't have moved forward on.
That's really interesting because, you know, I don't have to explain it to you, but I'll, for the benefit of the listeners, again, you know, Debbie's not able to sell the condo while waiting for the certificate, but you can sell it, but you can't close it, which makes it hard to sell. But Debbie, you know that there are people out there who look for those deals, right? Because they kind of think that they can lowball the price because they know that it's a undefined closing date. And so they'll say to you, because there are people who don't need to close in order to buy. You know what I mean? Normally, it's a trickle effect. Normally, when you're buying and selling a house, right? You got to sell your house so you got the money to pay for the next house. But if that's not the case and you're just like speculating in the market, you can find these properties that are listed for sale while they're still in probate, and you can negotiate because there's an unknown. And you can say, yeah, I'll sit on it. I'll sit on it with you for 6 months if you give me this deal when the probate finally, you know, is completed.
Right. And that begs the question of, is that the best deal for the estate?
Exactly. Good point. Probably
not. As an executor, our role is to do the very best we can for the estate, sell the assets for as high as we can, doing everything lawfully, of course, and maximizing the benefits to the beneficiaries of the estate. So when we put something up for sale before we have the probate certificate and you're waiting for months and months and months and maybe extending deals and paying out penalties and involving lawyers to draft documents, have you really done the best you could have for this estate because you wanted to get it on the market? And I do want to make sure we drill home on this, because sometimes the executors do receive pressure from real estate agents. And this is not a knock against the real estate agents listening out there right now, but we do have to put the brakes on when we're dealing with probate applications and listing a home. I know that sometimes the market's hot or it's a better time to sell right at this moment, but it's sort of useless if you can't even close the home and it puts the estate in a vulnerable position.
Well said for sure. And obviously, as the executor, there's a liability issue there. You touched on that. And if any beneficiaries of the estate think that, you know, you cut corners and cost the estate money for the sake of speediness or whatever, side deals or whatever they think, you've got a problem, right? You've got to defend, you know, your actions.
Exactly. I couldn't have said that better myself. That's exactly what you have to do. And you have to say why you did that. So let's hold off a little bit, make sure that we have all our ducks in a row before we go down the road of getting ourselves in a bad situation as an executor and with the estate's property. So in this case, we didn't do that. So we're actually able to sell the property and close within a few weeks. So that will be a great update in the coming month or so. What's funny to me about where we are is I actually have been able to sell the home before I've been able to liquidate the investment accounts. We're still stuck with the financial institutions with the paperwork.
Is the house empty now, Debbie, or do you still have to do that kind of work?
The house is mostly empty. We do have a few items that we're just going to pick up and move. But other than that, we were able to do the content auction. So I would say at this point, we're about 90% empty. There's just some odds and sods that we don't really know what to do with. Nobody wanted to buy. We need the beneficiary's permission to donate. So we're just in that paperwork process with the beneficiaries to ensure that the items that probably will be tossed can be tossed, and the ones that are remaining can be donated.
Okay, my last question before we wrap up the segment here. The listeners, I'm sure, are going to be curious. Some of them, at least I am. Can you tell us, like, you've said it's sold. I know it hasn't closed, but once it's closed, right, this property was probated. And once it's closed and the money is in the lawyer's trust account, right, what happens next to that money? How fast does it get put in the hands of the beneficiaries? And in 20 words or less, I know I keep saying that to you, what does that process look like?
Debbie, why do you always limit me to 20 words?
I'm getting the stink eye. I'm getting the stink eye for Debbie.
Okay, so the house closes, the money goes into the lawyer's trust account. From there, the lawyers actually move it into the estate bank account. So we have an estate bank account open. The monies will be transferred into that bank account so that we can then carry on and do tax returns, pay income taxes, pay bills that we still have to pay. There's still some condo fees and things like that, just, you know, wrapping up the last hydro bill and the last cable bill, those items. And then we'll start issuing some partial distributions to the beneficiaries. And 20 words or less, we're still looking at maybe a couple more months before we send a check off to the beneficiaries. But it could be a little bit sooner depending on tax projection, so on and so forth. So I guess the answer is stay tuned.
Now, in your experiences, has there been things that pop up after you think everything's already wrapped up and all of a sudden something just shows up?
Well, the idea is to ensure that you're doing everything very methodically and laying everything out. So by the time you are issuing out your very last distribution, there should be no surprises. You should have scraped everything to make sure that there's no outstanding bill out there. If for whatever reason you missed something, then it's we can talk about that on another segment.
Yeah,
there's a few different options.
Okay, isn't sort of one thing that is kind of a constant that people will miss.
Taxes. Taxes is one that gets missed. Just, you know, little things out here, repayments of the Ontario Trillium Benefit or the GST credits. I would say that it really comes down to taxes.
Mm-hmm. But of course, missing things and not missing things is the difference between dealing with a professional executor and someone who's winging it and trying to figure it out for the first time. Right.
Exactly. Yes. So,
having said that, if people are looking for more information as to how to obtain the services of a professional executor, Debbie, how can they reach you?
Well, they can always find us on our website, which is etpcanada.ca. Our phone number is 866-309-0387. Our email is info@etpcanada.ca. And if you'd like to take a course to learn about being an executor, then you can try executorready.ca.
All right. So in the meantime, you enjoy your week and we will see you next week. We'll step aside and come back with more of the show. Stay with us.
Learn more about avoiding probate at avoidprobate.ca or call 1-844-667-7628. Back with more Avoid Probate after this.
It's time to gear up for fall with cool weather fashions from the very cool Kensington Market. Hey, it's Ted Wallace in Fort Tom's Place, where you're invited to check out the latest fall fashions that have just arrived. And since it is Tom's Place, even the new arrivals are on sale. Fall colors, new patterns, fresh designs, designer slim fit suits sold elsewhere for as much as $600, start at only $179 at Tom's Place. Check out Tom's fabulous collection of S. Cohen and other designer suits. Regular, 3 for $1,200, slashed for radio listeners to $1,100. Pick out a couple of sports jackets. Selected sports jackets are now 50% off, plus selected dress and casual pants, 50% off. Play it cool at Tom's Place, 190 Baldwin Street in the heart of Kensington Market. Tom's Place will suit you.
This is Avoid Probate on Zoomer Radio with Jason Laidler of avoidprobate.ca.
Hey, good morning once again to you, and thank you for joining us. It is the Avoid Probate Show. I am Ted Wallerson with Jason Laidler. And as usual, we invite you to join us on our website, which is www.avoidprobate.ca. When you go to the website, by the way, you'll find a number of interesting things. First, there is a free probate calculator. Play around with that, and you can see approximately how much your estate or your family's estate may be valued at. And also, you can click the Listen to the Show button, which will allow you to listen to any of our past episodes of the Avoid Probate Show, which is now in year 3. So again, go to www.avoidprobate.ca, and you can send us an info@avoidprobate.ca. If you have any questions or if you have any comments that you would like to share or any suggestions for future shows, or if you'd like to inquire about us coming to your service group, whether it be the Kiwanis Club or the Rotarians, whatever it happens to be, if you'd like us to come and bring the roadshow version of the Avoid Probate Show, which is Jason and I and Colin shows up and Debbie Stanley as well, and we answer questions and talk about all kinds of different situations that Jason has encountered, you can do so by sending us a note or giving us a call at toll-free 1-844-667-7628. That's 1-844-667-7628. So you can contact us in many ways, and lots of information there that I thought I'd share. So please get in touch.
Thanks for sharing that, Ted. And I just want to add, the roadshow is a good laugh too, if I do say so. We try to have fun.
And it's free.
Free, informative, and entertaining. Okay, well, what's not so entertaining, I don't mind admitting it right off the top here, this segment, it is It is riff season. And I've been meaning to talk about this on a Sunday morning, and it just so happened this past week, as I mentioned, more than one time, it came up, and it wasn't brought up by me. It was brought up by the listener, the new people we were meeting with. And I'm glad and good for them, because what am I talking about when I say RIF season? RIF, R-R-I-F, Registered Retirement Income Fund. That's what RIF stands for, in case anybody's wondering. Registered Retirement Income Fund. Registered being the first R. We know what that means. It means you can put a beneficiary on the plan because it's a registered plan. The RIF is created from the RSP. The RSP and the RRSP are the same thing. The RSP is the lazy person's version of the RRSP. First R, of course, once again, stands for registered, and the rest of it is Registered Retirement Savings Plan. Most people are familiar with the RRSP, and most people of a certain age also are aware of the fact that when you get to the age of 71, you have to convert your RSP to something else. It doesn't have to go to a RIF, by the way. There are other options. The RIF is the most preferred by far. And what does that mean? What is the RIF? Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of confusion just about the RSP itself. I'm not going to get into what the RSP is and the details of it, but I do want to spend a few minutes talking about the RIF details. The oversimplification is that the RIF is the RSP in reverse. So when you convert your RSP to a RIF, and it costs nothing to do this conversion, and I'll talk about why you have to do this and what it means. We've got a few minutes here in this segment just for this topic of conversation. We're going to focus today on RIF stuff. And if you're not 71 this year, well, maybe you are next year or the year after. You're still going to benefit from this information for sure. You know people who are. 71 is the age that the government chose to decide to force people to end their RSP. You've had tax-free growth in the RSP for a long time. Now they're saying, okay, time to start paying the piper. So we're going to force you to flip this thing over, again, normally to a RIF. There are other options. And once it's in a RIF, you are now forced to make withdrawals. Whether you need the income or not, you're forced to make withdrawals from the RIF based on your age. Simple as that. Now, one little caveat. You're forced to convert to the RIF before the end of the year you turn 71. So whatever date your birthday is, before that year's over, you have to have converted your RSP to the RIF. You do not have to make a withdrawal in that year. So you kind of get a pass. In the year you're 71, you get a pass. You can make a withdrawal. In fact, you can convert the RSP to the RIF anytime you want under the age of 71. If you're 67 and you think you need to have a RIF, fine. You can convert the RSP to a RIF at the age of 67. There can be reasons to do that. And by the way, if you are 67 and you convert to a RIF, and then when you're 69, you decide you don't need the RIF anymore, you can flip it back to the RSP. The main difference is you can make contributions to the RSP. You cannot make contributions to the RIF. Your contributing days are over once your RSP becomes a RIF, because like I said, it's the government's way of forcing you to start making withdrawals from the plan. Why do they want you to make withdrawals? Any ideas, Ted?
I don't really, to be honest with you. I mean, because I understand why they have it and why they have LIFs, for example, is because they want to make sure that you save some money. You don't cash everything in.
That's right.
Which I think is stupid, because what's happening is when you've got all this money sitting there and you may not be, and you've lost your job and you need money to live off, now you find yourself going into debt just so you can support your monthly payments for whatever it is, your car, your house, your food and whatever. And so now you go into debt, even though you've got money sitting there. So I think in that way, the government is stupid.
Well, okay, I'm not going to argue with that. I can see where you're coming from. That could happen for sure. It's not an ideal situation, and I could think of better planning strategies for sure than to see that happen. We don't see that happen very often, I don't think. But to answer the question why they want you to start making withdrawals, simple answer is because now they can tax you on it. Because this is how it goes. It's very simple, listeners. Every dollar that comes out of your RSP or your RIF is a dollar that the government pretends you earned as income, and therefore it's income tax applies. So every dollar you earn in Canada, income tax applies. Now, you may have deductions and offsetting deductions and reasons to not pay the tax, but doesn't matter. First of all, it goes into income. If you have ways of avoiding the tax on it, so be it. But it all becomes income first. So when you now have a RIF instead of an RSP and you're forced to make a withdrawal based on your age, I'll talk about what those percentages look like in a second. Whatever the number is, whether it's $1 or whether it's $3,276, that dollar amount goes into your income as if you earned it and is taxed accordingly. So that's why I say it's the RIF in, it's the RSP in reverse. You are now depleting that pool of money that you've been building up with RSP contributions because you're forced to make withdrawals. The withdrawal rate, just to give you an idea, for a 71-year-old, I hope I'm right about this. I think I am. I did check, 5.28%. So just over five and a quarter percent is the minimum amount you must take as income from the RIF when you're 71. Well, when you're 72, I should say, because there's no minimum at 71. At 72, 5.25%. And that just continues to climb every year that you get older. So I don't have the table in front of me, but if it's 5.28 today, next year it's 5.78. Year after that, it's 6.1. You know, you get the idea. And what happens is it creeps up based on your age until such time you get to be 95. If you're lucky to live that long, 95. And then the government says, okay, enough of that. We're just going to make it a flat 20% withdrawal. So when you're making 20% withdrawals from any investment plan, that investment's going to go to zero pretty fast because you're probably not earning 20% in returns to offset the withdrawal. Especially if you're in your 90s, you're probably very conservatively invested, maybe making 5% on GICs. Well, it's a 15% spread and you're taking out 20%. So yeah, the RIF will go to zero if you live long enough. Now, there are insurance products that will protect your RIF forever. We're not going to talk about that today, but they do exist and we can provide them. We call them the never-ending RIF, very unique investment solutions. But without these insurance products that I just made reference to, if you live long enough, you're going to outlive your RIF. It's going to go to zero because of the 20% withdrawal at a certain age, late in your 90s. Okay, so I think that covers the gist of the RIF. Now, I want to emphasize there's no maximum withdrawal amount. Just because you're forced to make a minimum withdrawal doesn't mean you can't take more. Why would you take more? Well, there could be good reasons to take more. You need it to live on. You need it to subsidize your expenses, your living expenses.
You want to help one of your kids that would buy a house.
You want to help a child, a grandchild. You're sick. You need, medical expenses. I guess that's living expenses. Or, I mean, if you're really sick and you know you're not, you know, long to be here to enjoy the sunshine on your face, you know, you could, who cares, take it out and then give it away. You can gift it. You can treat yourself to a vacation. You can do whatever you want with the money. It's not locked in. It's not like pension money that's locked in. There, with pension money, there can be maximum withdrawal amounts. There is no maximum withdrawal amount on the RIF. So here's a problem. And this is the Avoid Probate Show. How is this connected to probate? You might be wondering. Well, it certainly is connected to probate in more than one way. First of all, if there's a beneficiary on the RIF, then the RIF does not have to get probated. But there's not always the beneficiary on the RIF, just like with the TFSA. If the RIF is payable to the estate, it's going to be probated. That's not cool, especially because there's an easy option built into the plan. Name a beneficiary, even if it's a charity. If you don't have children, or even if you don't have nieces or nephews or family members you can think of, you can name a charity and that'll avoid the probate on the RIF just by having a beneficiary named on it. And of course, you can mix it up. You can do a combination, whatever you like. You have full control. But I wanted to make sure that listeners understand, you know, there's no maximum Here's a problem, though, with the estate plan. The government, and we've talked about this a few times, when you die in Canada, the government pretends you sold everything, you know, 5 minutes, the minute before you pass away, they pretend you sold everything you owned. And that creates tax events. We talked a few minutes ago about how every dollar that comes out of the RIF is treated as income. Well, if the government pretends that you sold the whole thing 5 minutes ago, and it was worth, I don't know, pick a number, $125,000, $82,000, $230,000, whatever the number is in the plan, and it can be a big number for sure. If you've been making RSP contributions for 30 or 40, 50 years, and you've had some good returns, sure, it could be $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, whatever. If that whole dollar amount comes into your income in the same year, well, clearly that puts you in the highest tax bracket there is in Canada, which you get to around, I should have checked this, I'm going to say about $140,000 of income, something like that, is what you'd need to be in the top tax bracket. And that's 50, just over 50%, believe it or not. So you're way over the top tax bracket minimum number if you have $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 of income. By the way, it's on top of all your other income, including your CPP, your OAS, any earned income. You might still be working. Lots of people beyond the age of 71 are still working. So you could have, we call that earned income from working at your business or whatever you're doing for work. So all of this gets added to your income. That's a huge hit. Yeah. A huge hit in taxes, because right away, you know, okay, your income's 350 grand. Half of that goes to the tax man. And it does not go to your children or your loved ones. It goes to Ottawa. And that really rubs some people the wrong way. So there can be strategies to mitigate this tax loss. And again, this came up a couple times this past week. One of them, and I would say right now, warning, these are not for everybody. I have done them in the past. It's a unique situation where everything fits. You got to check all the right boxes. But one of them is known as a RIF meltdown. RIF meltdown. Why? What does that mean? Well, remember, the whole thing's going to come into your income tax in the year you pass away. So if we are able, Ted, to reduce the balance of the RIF aggressively, you know, ahead of schedule, younger versus older, then when you do pass away, because we know it's going to happen, maybe the RIF balance is a lot lower because we've melted it down. And if it's lower, then that's less income going into your taxes and it's less tax being paid. So in theory, if we melted the RIF down to zero, just to make the point, if it got melted down to zero and that's the year you pass away, well, there's nothing to add to your income. And there's nothing to add to your income, there's no additional taxes. So that's kind of the goal with this RIF meltdown. But it does involve borrowing to invest. Once again, borrowing to invest. And that's, we've just scared away half the listeners, I think, Ted, by using that term, borrowing to invest. And, but I will say this, you know, anybody, borrowing to invest gets a bad rap. So I like to remind people, anybody who's ever had a mortgage has borrowed to invest. So it's really not that scary when you think about it. But I'm going to quickly outline what this meltdown strategy looks like, because I'm sure a lot of listeners are not familiar with it. And yes, we can do this for you, and we can avoid the probate on the whole thing. And it works like this in a nutshell. I've got a RIF, I don't know, let's just say it's 100,000 bucks for easy math, okay? That's my RIF. I'm forced to make withdrawals. I want to melt it down as fast as I can so that it doesn't come into income when I pass away. I borrow some amount of money from a lender. Pick a lender, it doesn't matter who it is, but it's a normal lender, it's a normal loan, it's an investment loan. And so there's an interest rate charge to it. You know, you're not going to borrow it for free. The lender is doing this for a profit. They're going to charge you interest. That's fine. So I don't know, pick a number, 6% interest is, well, maybe higher than that, maybe 7% on an investment loan, whatever it is. Maybe we should use 10% again, just for easy math. 10% on the investment loan, probably higher than it would be. Okay, here's the thing. Borrowing to invest is tax deductible. The cost of borrowing to invest is a tax deduction. That 10% interest loan I talked about, interest payment, is a deduction. So what do I do with that? I have a new deduction in my hand to offset income. I can make an offsetting RIF withdrawal to whatever the dollar amount is that offsets the 10% new deduction. I didn't have the deduction before I borrowed to invest. Now I do. If I make a withdrawal from the RIF above my minimum to whatever the dollar figure is, let's say it's, let's say that the 10% repayment is $2,500. The 10% on my loan is a $2,500 repayment. I take $2,500 out of the RIF. It's a wash. What I mean by that is the $2,500 I take out of the RIF, once again, goes into my income because every dollar does. So I'm going to be taxed on that $2,500. But now I happen to have an offsetting tax deduction for $2,500 because of the cost of servicing the investment loan. So now I'm not really paying any tax at all on the extra money that came out of the RIF. So the RIF is going down faster. We're melting it down. And I've got an investment on the other side here because I borrowed to invest. And in theory, that investment's growing. The loan balance is shrinking because I'm making payments. My investment outside the RIF is growing. My RIF value is shrinking. That's a good scenario. That's called a RIF meltdown. It's not for everybody. We wouldn't do it for just anybody. You have to qualify, so to speak. But it works. It works very, very well. I got a real quick. The other option, of course, is life insurance can be a solution. If the bill to Ottawa, because of the $300K and the RIF, if half that goes to Ottawa, that's $150. Okay, I can replace that $150 with a life insurance policy for $150, assuming I'm insurable. So for pennies on the dollar, I could pay life insurance premiums, or my kids could, because they're the ones who are going to benefit from replacing the $150. And we can do that too. And all of that is taxed, is not probated either. We can avoid probate on the whole thing. Life insurance proceeds are not probated. Lots of details about the RIF. I did warn you, listeners, in the beginning of this segment. I hope that helps you as opposed to completely confuses you. Please, if you are confused or if you have more questions or want to explore it further, we're happy to answer your questions. Please contact us in the way that Ted provided you the phone number and the email address, and we'll answer your questions, or better yet, set up a no-charge consultation. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Learn more about avoiding probate at avoidprobate.ca or call 1-844-667-7628. Back with more Avoid Probate after this.
A diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease or dementia for you or someone in your life can be challenging. You don't have to face it alone, especially when help and support are so close at hand. The Alzheimer's Society of Ontario can connect you with experts, education and care, valuable resources, and people who really want to help. Connect with us, the Alzheimer's Society of Ontario, at ourconnectionsmatter.com.
This is Avoid Probate on Zoomer Radio with Jason Laidler of avoidprobate.ca.
Welcome back. And this is the Avoid Probate Show. Ted Wallace and Jason Laidler. And the information that we provide for you each and every week in this program is for general consumption only. It is not intended generally to provide particular legal or investment advice because every situation is different. And because it is, you have legal or investment questions. If you have them, you should speak with a licensed expert. We have licensed experts available, and you can get to us via email, info@avoidprobate.ca, info@avoidprobate.ca, or phone us toll-free 1-844-667-7628. 1-844-667-7628. By the way, if you look at that, if you spell out, it's 1-844-NO-P-R-O-B and the number 8, as in probate. No probate.
What was that? Can you do that one more time?
It's 1-844-NO-N-O-P-R-O-B and the number 8, no probate.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
Oh, yeah, a real coincidence.
What were the chances of the number? Yeah, okay. I hope that, you know, just for those listeners who are confused, you know, there's letters on the dial pad. Like, I don't have one in front of me to look at it, but, you know, like the two is like EFG, and then you know what I mean? So you can spell out the phone number, like Ted said. We don't often share that tidbit with the listeners because it's hard to visualize on the radio. Anyway, thanks, Ted, for that tidbit.
No problem.
We're a little tight for time here, wrapping up this hour, this edition of the Avoid Probate Show. So I do have one short and sweet email, though, that I wanted to share. And it is short and sweet, but I love this email. So I had pick it. I was actually advised not to by some of our colleagues, but I went ahead and made the executive decision to share it. So go ahead, Ted. You've got it in front of you.
Here it is. Good morning. I recently added money to my TFSA, tax-free savings account, by the way. While I was there, I asked if the TFSA would be probated, and they, whoever they may be, said it would. Is it possible to transfer to a financial institution to avoid probate? Please advise the best options.
All right. Let's be serious here as much as I can for this thing. Thank you, by the way, to the listener for writing in, taking the time to ask this question. It is a very legitimate question, no doubt about it. And I'm glad, Ted, you expanded the TFSA designation, tax-free savings account. And what I was going to say is, I want to politely remind the listeners, it is TFSA, not TSFA, even though lots of people call it a TSFA, and it's easy to get tongue twisted on that. But anyway, a minor point. So I don't know where this happened. We don't know, like Ted said. Let's assume, as I always do, it's at a bank. It doesn't mean it was at a bank, but let's assume it was. And good for this person, you know, because we've talked about many, many times saying just because you can have a beneficiary on the TFSA doesn't mean there is one. And I'm here to tell you, I've seen it many, many times in a meeting. Remember, we're available. Once again, I'll remind the listeners, there's a no charge consultation meeting available for you if you want to sit down and get some more info and explore the uniqueness of your situation in some nitty gritty. We're happy to do that. Contact the office at those numbers or the email that Ted provided, and we'll come to you and we'll have a look and we'll have a casual conversation, and you'll be an expert by the end of it, basically. But anyway, again, just because you can have a beneficiary doesn't mean there is one, and good for this person for taking the time to ask the question. But what a shocking answer. Now, the answer, of course, was, is it possible to transfer? No. Will it be probated? They said it would. Again, we don't know who they are. They said it would. What does that tell me? That tells me, A, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Or B, we have to, again, give everybody the benefit of the doubt here. It's possible the owner of the TFSA has chosen not to name a beneficiary. There can be reasons for that. Not many, that's for sure. It's kind of an oddball situation. But if that's what happened, we don't know. Then it will be probated. And that's what I was saying about, you know, just because you think you've got beneficiaries on there, it doesn't mean you're right. You should double check. This person took the time to double check, I guess, and they were told it was going to be probated. I'm going to assume that I don't know. I can't make any assumptions. I shouldn't make any assumptions at all. But it's weird to me that they were told it was going to be probated, because it's simple. There's a simple way to not probate the TFSA. And again, that is simply by having the beneficiary on it. Now, getting back to the second part of the email, the question about, is it possible to transfer to a financial institution? Absolutely. And we strongly encourage you to call us so that we can do that transfer for you. And we do this all the time. We talk about the non-registered money being the problem with regard to probate, because you can't put a beneficiary on it. But so many times said we get in front of people who've reached out to us, and we're explaining the solution, which involves a transfer to an insurance company where we can take care of the non-registered money. And they'll often say, you know what, move it all. You know, I'm not that impressed with the service I've been getting or the rate of return I've been getting anyway. I don't feel the love at the institution I've been using for the last 25 years or whatever the number is. And I don't want another set of statements. So if you can take care of all of it, Jason, please do. And we're happy to do that. And frankly, it's not a bad idea for those reasons. Who wants more paperwork? I get it. I'd like to think we're going to do as good a job, if not better, than whoever's managing it today. So yeah, we'd love that.
I was just going to say that if you can put a beneficiary on it, what would be the benefit of moving it and putting it, with a financial institution that you think you could do a better job making money for them than the TFSA will just sitting?
Great question. One of the main reasons, well, there's lots of reasons we move the registered money along with the non-registered money. And I don't have time to get into it today, but we can touch on it for sure in another show. I'm going to remind you and the listeners, we talk about this 100% death benefit guarantee that's available on the insurance side. There's nothing like it on the banking side, nothing at all. So when we do the transfer, whether it's registered or non-registered, we can provide guarantees on the capital that are not available at the banks in any way. And people are shocked. And there's multiple parts to the guarantee. The guarantee itself, 100%, like I said, plus an option to lock in growth and guarantee that your growth stays with you, if you know what I mean. That's not a very good description of it. But again, call us. We'll explain it in more details. It is an amazing feature that the insurance companies offer. I've said there's many advantages to dealing with the insurance company. And I've also said many times, the insurance companies today have as many, if not more, investment options than the banks do. They're competing hard to get those assets under management from the banks. And they're doing a great job of it because they have these features that are unique. Avoiding probate, for one, massive. That's what we're here about every Sunday morning, talking about avoiding probate on the Avoid Probate Show. But other features as well, like the 100% capital guarantee and others that I don't have time to get in. Privacy, we've talked about the list of them several times. We'll review it again in the near future. That said, let's move on real quick. Ted, have you got a minute to tell us about your latest podcast?
Yes, I do. We were very fortunate in grabbing Dan Patrick as our special guest this week. He has written a book called The Occasionally Accurate Annals of Football, the NFL's Greatest Players, Plays, Scandals, Screw-Ups, Plus Stuff We Totally Made Up. It's a fascinating book. If you're a football fan, even if you're not a football fan, it's very funny. He co-wrote this book with Joel Cohen. Now, Joel Cohen is a Canadian, and he's also a three-time Emmy Award winner and a writer-producer for The Simpsons. Dan Patrick, for those people...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I remember,
Dan,
yes.
Dan Patrick, for those people who don't know who he is quite the accomplished sports journalist. He was an anchor for ESPN television for 18 years. He hosted Football Night in America. He's hosted the Olympics for NBC, and he hosts the Dan Patrick Show, which is a weekday show, I should say, heard on more than 400 radio stations across North America, plus seen on some Peacock television streaming services. Back in 2020, he was inducted into the Sports Casting Hall of Fame, and in 2021, into the Radio Hall of Fame. So, again, if you're a fan of football or facts and just humor in general, there's some very, very funny stories and very, very interesting things. And there's even a chapter here on the CFL. And there are a number of contributors in this book. There are, I think, Chuck Tatham is one of them. Chuck Tatham is another. He's a Canadian boy who was born just outside of Guelph. He writes a chapter on picking a favorite NFL team. And Chuck Tatham is a writer. Well, he's written for a number of great shows, including Arrested Development and Modern Family, to name but a few. So it's
all
great
right.
Book. Great.
We're going to leave it at that for this episode of the Avoid Probate Show. Thanks for that, Ted. Thanks to all our listeners for joining us on this Sunday morning. Special thanks to Kelly for taking care of us from the other side of the glass, as usual. Thanks to Debbie Stanley. Thanks to you again for joining us. Thanks again. We'll be back next Sunday to do it all over, right, Ted?
You bet.
Okay, enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You've been listening to an exclusive podcast of Avoid Probate with Jason Laidler. Heard every Sunday at 8 a.m. on Zoomer Radio.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.